I'm just going to write up roughly what we're going to be talking about over the next few lectures. So you know the idea of these courses is sort of a review, sort of a make sure everybody's up to speed. This one, you'll be talking about differential equations with me for the next, we'll have four lectures, one today and three next week. So this is some of the things that we'll be covering. I should also say at this stage, if at any point you can't hear me, speak up. If at any point I'm moving too fast, speak up. If at any point you can't read my writing, please speak up. And feel free to come and see me anytime if you need help with anything. So we're going to start out nice and easy. The first few things we're going to discuss, probably everybody's fairly comfortable with already. If you're not, don't worry. But I expect most people are going to be fine with this. Today we're going to talk mostly about first order equations. So probably everybody's going to be okay with that. But after Freddie's course with all this new material the last few days, you might appreciate that. So. And these are sort of the basics for differential equations, right? So we'll talk about first order, second order, with linear with constant coefficients, the homogeneous and the non-homogeneous case. So you already recognize this as damped simple harmonic motion and damped simple harmonic motion with forcing term. And then we'll get on to some things that probably you've all seen, but you probably all have a different level of comfortableness with. So we're mostly going to be talking about ordinary differential equations with one variable. But where do most of these come from? Most of them come from PDEs and separation of variables. So we'll just review that at some point. And we'll talk about power series method. And then some other more general, some interesting second order equations. So that would be Bessel's equation. Legendre's equation and WKB approximation. So probably everybody's come across these at some point. Bessel's equation, I always get these confused, but Bessel's equation, I got this the right way around, yep, comes from the solution of Laplace's equation in cylindrical coordinates. And Legendre's equation, you get it from solution of Laplace's equation in spherical coordinates. So how many people are pretty comfortable with Bessel's and Legendre equation? Somewhat. Okay, that's good to know. So I expect, if I think back to when I was just finishing undergraduate, I would have seen these at some point, but maybe you're not totally comfortable with them. And there's some identities and some other representations and things that are useful, so we'll talk about some of them. Okay, so today we're going to talk about mostly first order ODEs, which again, you're probably, hopefully, quite comfortable with. And in the tutorial, we'll talk about some second order problems and we'll introduce the power series method. So I'll be using the lectures and the tutorials to review material that I maybe think you've probably seen already. So there'll be a bit of a mix. Today I might try and get you to be a bit interactive as well. So there'll be a bit of a crossover between lectures and tutorials. So what are the important first order methods? And you might remember I once said I really wanted to be able to write on the boards all the way around. So I'm going to write up what we're going to get to later.
30 requests from overseas. Can you write larger, please? They cannot read it.
Write larger. Yes. Thank you. Okay, so these are some methods for solving first-order equations, and we'll come back to them. And of course, I'm going to immediately forget to write bigger. Is that okay? I'll start larger over here. It's just to confuse the AV guys as well, right? You have to follow me around the room.
Are you going to write underneath this?
Yes, I am. Or rather, some of you are, I think. I'm not tall enough.
So, you're still talking about your plan.
I'm talking about, yeah, what we're going to do today. Okay, good. So, later we'll come to some examples of each of these. And maybe some of you will solve some of them. So does everybody know what I mean by each of those terms? Everyone seen separation of variables for ODEs? Yep. Some other equations which may not be immediately separable, but with some transformation are reducible to separable form. Some which are straight off written as exact differentials, and some by writing an integrating factor, you can write them as exact differentials. OK, so these are some of the things we'll come to. Let me start over here. I'm going to start with some examples. So because I said that you might know a lot of the maths already, I'm going to try and do some physics that you might not already know. So to show you that these simple equations can come about from some interesting physics. So let's start with this example. And I'll explain where the equation comes from. Okay, so to start with, does anyone recognize this equation? No? Yay, you're going to learn some new physics today. Anybody? Okay, good. So this comes from Einstein's theory of radiation. Anyone recognize it now? OK. So this is something you may not have seen in an undergraduate course, but we're going to see that we get quite a simple differential equation that you should all be able to solve. So where does this come from, and what do each of these terms represent? Here we're talking about a two-level atom interacting with a radiation field. And in the Einstein theory, the radiation field is still classical electromagnetic field. So this is the spontaneous emission. So, well, first of all, N1 and N2 are the populations of the ground state of the atom and the excited state, states 1 and 2. And if an atom starts off in the higher state, in the state labeled 2, it can decay to the lower state by emitting a photon into the field. So that's what spontaneous emission is. And you expect the rate of spontaneous emission to be proportional to the number of atoms which are excited initially. Is that clear? OK. So that's what this term is, the rate of spontaneous emission. And this term So the other thing you might expect with a two-level atom in a radiation field is if there's some intensity in the field, the atom might be able to absorb a photon and go to the higher energy level. So this is, you know, if the atom starts in level one, it can absorb a photon and go into level two. And the rate at which that happens depends on the population of level one and also the strength of the electromagnetic field. So that's what this W represents, is the strength of the field. Actually, it's the energy density. And so that much is sort of intuitive, I think. Any questions so far? The maybe surprising part when this is first discovered is that you also need stimulated emission. So that might seem sort of counterintuitive. If you have an atom in the field stimulates the atom to emit photons into the field. So again, the spontaneous emission, the spontaneous emission you can understand, the atom spontaneously relaxes to its ground state. You might not expect that if there are lots of photons in the surrounding energy, in the surrounding field, that that would also stimulate the atom to relax to the ground state. Sorry, got confused there. But in fact, you can show that this term is necessary just by considering equilibrium and thermal equilibrium. So this part might be some new physics to some of you. This is the Einstein theory of radiation equation. And let me see. So here, and the total number of atoms remains constant. So the population, the number of atoms in level one plus the number of atoms in level two remains constant n. OK, any questions about derivation? Good. So let's consider first a simple case. Where there's no field. Then we just get n2 dot equals minus n2a. And so a and b are just constants associated with the atom. So everybody recognizes this equation? Yes? What's the solution? Somebody? Anybody? Exponential decay. Thank you. So, and this is our first simple demonstration of separation of variables, which is one of the things I mentioned at the start. Okay, good. So in the absence of an external field, the population of atoms eventually decay to their ground state under spontaneous emission. And as you pointed out, the emission or the decay of the excited state is an exponential decay. And further, each time an atom decays, it emits a photon of energy h bar omega. So by observing the emitted field, the intensity of that field also falls off exponentially. And this is important because it's an experimental way of measuring the Einstein A coefficient. And that's just fluorescence. So you just look at the atom when there's no external field applied, and you measure the exponential decay of the intensity. Okay, so the general case, of course, is also solvable. We get a non-homogeneous linear first-order equation. Say that again. So here, yeah, I'm talking about N2 dot. So I'm talking about the second energy level. Thank you. And again, N1 plus N2 equals N. So we can replace. Okay, so this is our non-homogeneous linear equation. Everybody knows how to solve this? Okay, so these are just constants. This is just a constant. This is just a constant. Okay, so just replace them with alpha and beta. And how would you solve this?
First, solve the homogeneous one.
Right, great. So just to illustrate, integrating factor, we're going to use an integrating factor. So e to the alpha t into plus alpha e to the alpha t plus 2. I've done this wrong, haven't I?
On the other side as well.
Say again, what did I do?
Beta times.
Yeah.
Say again?
If you multiply it, you have to multiply both.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Of course. Okay, good. Let's see, and finally we get. Okay, I should be slowing down for me, not for you. Thank you. 1 over alpha beta e to the alpha t. Let me go down and follow my notes. Yeah, okay, good. And actually, I wanted to show the steady state solution, so we should be careful about the constants of integration as well. Excuse me, let me just be careful about that. So we get e to the alpha t, n2 of t minus n2 of 0 equals 1 over alpha beta e to the alpha t minus beta over alpha. Okay. And finally, our solution for n to t. And the reason I wanted to show the steady state solution is for the next part. Okay, so now I'm just going to substitute back in for alpha and beta. Okay, so just with some basic simple maths, this is the form for the decay of the excited state of the atom in the Einstein theory. And the steady state. So as t goes to infinity, the exponential term goes to zero. And the equilibrium solution And finally, it's common to denote by WS the energy density, which makes a spontaneous and stimulated emission the same. So WS is defined such that. So the rate of stimulated emission is equal to the rate of spontaneous emission. Okay, any questions? Good. So the second example I want to talk about follows from this, and it's to do with optical attenuation. So now we're considering some atoms in a medium and some light shining on them with energy density W, as before. And as the atoms absorb and re-emit the light, the exiting light will be attenuated compared to the incoming light. Can anybody tell me why? Okay, so, and this is where there's a little bit more physics again. In the spontaneous and stimulated emission, does anybody know how those processes work? No? Good, so this is some new physics too. So the stimulated emission, because it's stimulated by the radiation field, the photons that are emitted are in the same mode as the input field. And this is how a laser works, which you probably know. Pumping a gas with a weak pump field, the stimulated emission stimulates, basically amplifies the field because the stimulated emission is always in the same mode. So same frequency, same spatial mode, same polarization, same direction, etc. The spontaneous emission, on the other hand, because it has nothing to do with the input radiation field, can be emitted in any mode, so in any direction, in any polarization. So I hope you can see now that for an incoming beam hitting a bunch of atoms, which are then interacting and both absorbing and emitting radiation, for every photon that's emitted, only the ones that are emitted by stimulated emission go back into the same field. The ones that are emitted by spontaneous emission can go anywhere, or essentially scattered. And so when you look at the exiting beam out here, it's attenuated compared to the incoming beam. Is that clear? Any questions? So the stimulated emission adds to the beam, whilst the spontaneous emission is random and can go into any mode. Okay. So yes.
Is it still going to be completely random? Because if the photons which are emitted spontaneously, should also be their polarization should be correlated with the quantum numbers of the two energy levels. So if the difference in angular momentum of the two energy levels is same.
Right. So here we're assuming a two-level atom, and that you can have transitions between the two levels. And further, to keep the simplest case, we're considering non-degenerate energy levels. So the spontaneous emission happens whether the ambient light field is there or not. So it's independent of the ambient light field.
Yeah, but it's not going to be completely random because only some polarizations of the outgoing photons will be allowed because of the conservation of angular momentum.
Sure. Yeah. So maybe only some. But it's not going to be the same mode as the input field, which is the important part. Okay, so how do we write down a differential equation for how the attenuation occurs? I want you to think about this. Okay, so the rate of change of the energy density with time. Well, I just told you that it's only when we have spontaneous emission that the beam is attenuated. The stimulated emission doesn't attenuate the beam. It goes back into the same mode. So the rate of spontaneous emission is given by the number of atoms in the excited state times the A coefficient. And because we're talking about energy density, this is just the density of atoms in the excited state. And this is just some factor that tells you, this is the line shape. It just tells you how likely the atom is to emit into a frequency mode omega. And a photon of frequency omega has energy h bar omega. So this is how an emitted photon adds to the energy density of the field. Or sorry, takes from the energy density. Okay. And this will give us a slightly more interesting differential equation. But still should be easy for everybody to solve. So the other thing to mention is I'm going to consider the steady state case. So suppose this has been happening for a long time, and the atoms are in equilibrium. You have to excuse me because we don't have a clock. I'm keeping an eye on the time like this. So we assume the atoms are in equilibrium. And that's why I wanted the steady state solution before, which is here. So this is our steady state for N2. And I've lost the V, so we have a V here as well. Any questions? Yeah.
The minus sign?
And the minus sign, thank you. Okay, and the last thing I'm going to do is instead of writing in terms of the energy density, write in terms of the intensity and solve for the intensity. And I don't need partials. Okay, so the last thing I want to do is transform to the intensity and look at how the intensity is dropping off with distance into the gas instead of with time. And this is just some constant. This last bit. Okay, any questions on the derivation? So this part is also important to make sure you guys can understand the derivation of a differential equation, which is at least as important as being able to solve it. And this is just a constant. And I'm keeping the omega in here because it's useful for the theory that the point of deriving this is to understand how refractive index and optical properties of material change with frequency. So that's why there's this frequency dependence here. But it's for our purposes, this can be a constant. OK, so this is the second example of a differential equation. And again, this is, these aren't working anymore. Oh, one of them is like that. OK, good. And this is a nice, easy example of separation of variables, as you can probably see. Okay, so where's my equation? One over I. Plus two over S. And I want to keep the minus sign, so minus k omega. Is it? And then you can just integrate. So we get log I t minus log I 0. Yes.
And what is Z?
Sorry, what is?
Z.
Ah, sorry. So Z is now the distance into the material. Which one is this? So we now consider something Z. Thank you.
So it equals to CP or?
Right, so we're assuming this to be the direction of propagation. And this is the energy in the field per unit volume, the W. And intensity is the energy per unit area per unit time. So we have this relationship between the energy density in the field and the intensity. You see?
Okay, so Z is CP.
Right, so Z then is, so then to transform, yeah, Z is CT. To transform from dW dt to the rate of change with respect to time of the energy density to the rate of change into the material of the intensity, I've just done this change of variable.
But is dz by dt always c?
So we're considering the material to be such that the refractive index is close enough to 1.
Okay.
Yeah. And then this tells you something about the variations around that. Yeah. OK. So then there are two cases here that we can consider.
And this equation should have 2 over IS.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Got this over. 2 over IS. Yeah, thanks. And then there's two possible limiting cases. So if the intensity is much less than this saturation intensity, which again is defined by the rate of spontaneous emission to be being equal to the rate of stimulated emission. If the intensity is much smaller, then this second term is small. And we get an exponential dependence. And in the other limit, it's the first term that becomes negligible. Sorry, this is it. And we get a linear dependence on Z. Okay, so now I just want to talk about some simple examples for each of these cases, and we've sort of introduced some of them here. So here's a simple example. For separation of variables, we just used that, obviously, in this last example. Here's another simple example, which maybe you can take a couple of minutes, just make sure you know how to solve it. Can everybody see there? So I'm just going to write up a simple example for each case, and all I want you to do is just make sure you know how to solve it. And you can talk to one another if you want. I should warn you that I will ask someone to come and solve it. So if you don't know how to, please speak up.
going to have to solve each of those by exactly those methods. Or?
You don't have to. If you have another method, you can. You can do that. I prefer you use this method, but you don't have to. Any questions on any of you?
What is FM?
Oh, so where M and N are again defined as here. Thank you.
Okay.
So a derivative is an exact differential if this is an exact differential. So if M is du dx, partial derivative with respect to x, and n is the partial derivative with respect to y. And a necessary and sufficient condition for checking whether that's the case is if this holds, because they should both be equal to du dx. And for the integrating factor, as you probably know, the idea is to multiply through by some function such that the resulting differential is an exact differential. And these are all just useful methods to know, obviously. And if anyone's struggling with this one, this should tell you how to solve it. Oh, thank you. You're right. Maybe we just exchange them here and then everything else is right.
Integrating factor.
And this sign is mine.
Sorry, thank you. Wait. In this one?
Yeah.
This is right. This is right. Oh, because I wrote this the wrong way around. Thanks. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, so I called n the function associated with
the one. What is mine?
Thank you. Even better.
Yeah.
Okay, so do we have a volunteer for the first example? Bearing in mind that this is the easiest one, and you won't have to do the other ones if you do this one. Anyone? Brenda? Yeah, except they were looking for general solutions, so don't forget the constants. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Thank you. Everybody okay with that one? Good. Anyone not managed to solve the second one yet? Okay. You haven't? Okay, so a hint. Is if you think of it as a function of y over x and let u equal y over x.
Could it be even simpler if you consider y plus x?
Did you do that way?
So I didn't finish, but I looked at it and it looks very simple.
Because I thought of that at some point and
if you,
I didn't work it through. But
it's more difficult to solve if you write this as y. Yeah, plus 2 and minus 2.
Sure, sure.
So
we'll go ahead.
Maybe. 1 minus 2x on the right of x. You can change it to the variable, which is z. Right plus x, you can have two variables, x and z. And then this is a little bit simple, so we have. Z by dx is 1 by dx Mm-hmm. So basically you get that 5 prime is z prime minus 1. And of z prime minus 1 is equal to 1 minus 2x over z. And then you can just get out of that 2. So you multiply it by 2, multiply z.
Yeah, yeah. I thought I looked at this, and that it was the obvious way, and then it didn't work out for some reason. So yeah, I think the other way is easier.
What you can do is you can solve a homogeneous case and then find a particular solution, which is pretty easy.
Okay.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can finish it.
It would work.
Yeah, but it's a bit longer than my own break.
You can still finish.
So I can finish it.
Sure, go for it.
We have d z over dx. So I put this on this side minus 2 z.
You need to multiply through the z here as well, right?
Yeah, so that's it.
But maybe. Maybe what Lenny meant was use this bit as the homogeneous and then the particular solution.
Yeah, ignore the 2 for a while
and
then find
the
particular solution.
Yeah.
we turn into complex numbers now.
Okay, maybe let's not finish it this way.
Yeah.
I mean, you can if you want, but there's an easier.
So,
is this what you were doing, Lenny?
Yeah.
Do you want to?
It works out.
No, so it has to work out, but you just get basically that 1/3.
Well, the problem here is that this isn't your actual z, right? It's actually z homogeneous.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then when you find a particular solution, I think it's like z equals 2x plus 3, 2x over 3.
So this has to be 0.
Yeah.
You're good.
So this we need to find a particular solution that solves this.
Yeah.
And this will work, right?
But okay. 2x is equal to 2z.
Okay. So maybe we should continue this in the tutorial. Yes.
Can't you only add your particular and homogeneous solutions in the linear equation case?
Yeah.
And this is not a linear equation?
Right, this isn't linear.
Yeah, so.
Oh, good point. That does not work.
Good point.
All right, yeah, don't try to look at that.
Okay. So does anyone want to do it the other way, and then we can move on? Did everybody manage it the other way? Are there any questions?
I'll remember
Using u equals y over x. That's okay. So maybe we'll talk about the rest in the tutorial. Because it's now noon. Actually, the last thing I was going to mention was variation of parameters for a solution, which is for finding a particular solution. But I think we should probably stop here. Are there any questions about any of these examples that I asked you to do? So the purpose of today's lecture was really for me to get an idea of that you're comfortable with these or not. So we'll talk about these again in the tutorial, just so that I know that you're all comfortable with these methods. And also because we were discussing maths that a lot of you probably knew quite well, that's why I wanted to introduce some new physics as well, to maybe try and keep it interesting. So if you didn't understand all the physics, it's not a big deal. It was really just to talk about some physical systems that give us these nice simple equations that we can solve and what we can say about the solutions. So you'll notice that this lecture and tutorial has a bit of a quantum optics leaning. This afternoon, you'll be doing another problem to do with quantum optics in the tutorial. And also looking at power series solutions so that, again, I can see if you're all comfortable with that or not before we move on to solving Bessel's equation and Legendre's equation by power series.